Hello and welcome to the September 23rd Agricultural Advisory Committee of Alameda County. This is your chair, Carl Wente. I'd like to thank everybody for taking the time out of their day to show up and give their time, whether you're part of the committee or you're speaking on something that you believe in. Item number one is called order. Done so. Item number two, and I'm going to share my screen because I am a visual kid, and the share of the screen brings the agenda up, I hope, and the record notes that I have logged in under Allie's credentials, so it will show up as Allie, and so the agenda, Allie.
Chair Wente.
Aye.
Vice Chair Roberts.
Here.
Member Anderson.
Here.
Member V. Miller.
Here.
Member Campos is having a birthday today. He's excused. Member Farhad.
Here.
Member Gosselin.
Here.
Member Harvey is excused. Member Hoppies.
Here.
And Lynn Hunsinger is styling in remotely. Lynn, are you there? If you could raise your hand, Lynn. Okay, Lynn is not here yet. Member Moore.
Here.
Member Nordu.
Here.
Member Quigley.
Here.
Member Sullivan. Yet. Member Sweet.
Here.
And Member White. All right, we have a quorum.
The record reflects we have a quorum. Item number three, approval of the minutes.
Oh, ex officio members.
Yes.
I was fired, Chair.
It's very dedicated.
Ex officio member Barry.
Here.
Member Nan Ho.
Here.
Member Elke Rank. I'm not here today. And member Don Coon is right over there. And Allie Evers.
Allie
here. Yeah. All right, about every time. Apologies. We still have
a quorum, thank you, and I apologize. I do that every time. Item number three, approval of the minutes from June 24th, 2025, and July 22nd, 2025. I pull these up because, again, I'm a visual kid. For both of them, they are before us. Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes? We can take them as one, or we can separate them as needed if so needed. And does anybody have any comments, questions, or clarifications with regards to the 2 minutes before us?
There is just one typo that said embers instead of members, but I might want to look at that. And then I'll move to approve both June 24th and July 22nd.
Second. Motion on the table and a second. Any discussion? Anybody have any comments, questions, clarifications? Hearing none, take a oral vote. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Anybody opposed? Make yourself known now, please. Allie will go through with the requisite abstentions for those not in attendance to stay in alignment with bylaws and such.
And could you just, for the record, state who seconded that motion?
Okay.
Perfect. Okay. Thank you.
We don't need a public comment.
I think we do need to.
So we have a motion, well, then we should have not voted on that motion if we were going to public comment on the minutes beforehand. Again, I apologize as the fallibility of this chairman. So public comments on item number three, the approval of the 2 minutes from June 24th and July 22nd.
See, no raised hands in the room and no raised hands online.
The record reflects the new chair at the carriage in front of the horse there. Apologize. Item number four is open forum. Any member of the public may address the committee on a matter not on the regular agenda. No discussion or action item may be taken on these items. We ask for 2 minute time limits. And would anybody like to address us in the public forum? Seeing no hands in the room.
And I see no hands. I see no raised hands.
No hands raised online. We close the open forum. Item number four. Open item number five, the executive team updates. As always, I like to go through, reference our purpose, powers, and duties, and then the subcommittees of our structures for strategy. We're not going to go all the way through it. I Would like to applaud Allie for being a great partner, as I've done every time through. And our website is that much more robust with links, documents, and the likes of you can go and see what we're doing, what's going on. Up in front of us, I have bylaws. This will be the last time for me reading these through, but I think it is very important of what are we here for and what are we to do? Article 1, our name, we are the AAC of Alameda County. 2, the purpose of this committee is to act as a technical advisory panel of experts on matters involving the economic enhancement of agriculture and environmental conservation on applicable agricultural lands in Alameda County. Among other activities, which gives a little leeway in that direction, the committee shall provide leadership and direction in formulating policies relevant to agricultural and environmental conservation and in reviewing and advising the Planning Commission and the Board of Supervisors on applicable planning, zoning, and development proposals in the agricultural areas of Alameda County. Make recommendations to enhance the economic viability of agriculture and minimize undesirable environmental impacts. Provide active participation and leadership in the development of the open space preservation plan and promote agricultural involvement in the plan. Undertake direct special studies funded through Alameda County relating to preservation and economic enhancement of agricultural lands, protection of soils, plants, and wildlife habitats, water resources, property taxation, and determination of compatible uses, amongst other topics. Participate periodically in the review of Alameda County's guidelines for Williamson Act. Report to the Board of Supervisors on the effects of proposed local, state, and federal legislation affecting agricultural resources. Such reports may be forwarded to other bodies as appropriate through the auspices of the board. Advise and work through the auspices of the board, in this case, Board of Supervisors, with city, county, district government, special interest groups, and individuals concerning conflicts between agriculture, urban uses, and environmental quality. Advise and work with, through the auspices of the board, with city, county, state, federal, special interest groups, and other entities and district governments concerning open space program funding. Advise county departments on the impacts of programs affecting agriculture. Determine the committee's work schedule and proceedings, budget, and work product. It goes on through the regular members and through the regular members that shall reside in Alameda County. And then there are stipulations for going outside of Alameda County to fill the seats. And so it goes, all public domain. I encourage us to all know it. And this is the purpose, powers, and duties. And I want to take the opportunity to again thank Karen Sweet for that continuation of butts and seats, people in the room. We the people only happens when the people show up. So it's having this committee and having people in the seats in order to make it happen. So thank you, Karen, for your ongoing efforts there. All of this, again, is one click off the Alameda County Agricultural Advisory Committee's website. It's all public domain, and this is part of how the sausage is made and how this wonderful experiment of this constitutional democratic republic functions. That is 5A. 5B is the executive committee update. Raise your hand if you've been to an executive committee meeting in the last 12 months.
I don't know if we've held one.
Get it?
If we did.
We haven't, right? And from my leadership, I haven't done it. So there was a purpose for it. It's going forward. Again, the great partnership and communication with Allie to make sure we have the right items agendized as it goes forward. Item C obviously provides a transition for us as we go forward with this, of whether this serves or the chairman partnership with Allie, who's doing a great job to continue to move it forward. I've always been biased towards, I don't want to overstep those bounds as provided to me when I served as I am currently serving in this role. But at the same time, I believe in a strong executive to move things along, right? Let's go as we can. We move through this inherently fallible process of this constitutional democratic republic, which is the worst form of government except for every other experimental form that's ever happened, which makes it the best, right? But it's still, it's only when the people and how we show up as we go. That was the executive committee update. Anybody else on the executive committee have comment on item 5B? Yes, sir.
Yeah, I'd like to comment on the fact that over the years since the Ag Advisory Committee has been formed, there has been a transition in the committee and there's been a progression of our roles in the community. So one of the things that I've appreciated is Carl has brought a level of organization to us that helped us move forward with our work product within the committee. And as we move forward, not saying that Carl wasn't taken here, but with new leadership, I'm looking forward to us implementing and actually moving forward, developing those partnerships with other entities, other jurisdictions, other organizations. And what I can say is that is happening right now. And so I see that implementation is going to be coming forward.
Right on.
So thanks for the good work, Carl.
Thank you. With that, we're still on item B, right? It's exactly that. It's partnerships and working together in collaboration. Provide leadership, make recommendations, provide active participation, undertake, direct, participate periodically, report to, advise, work with, advise, work through, right? All of it is about that collaborative nature of what we do. And as I've said, executives run their course like coaches as it goes. I said I was going to make it till the end of the year. I'm not keeping up. And so effective now, I won't resign officially until there's maybe other due process, but now is the time for me as we transition. And so with that, I am proud, thank you, of what's been set up and flowing. And then I look back and I'm like, oh, there's so much more we could do, should do, we have the lines. But the reality of the process, the slowness of what happens here in the lights, right? I want to keep it going. And then so tried to set up a structure that will pervade going forward. And I hope it does. And at the same time, I hope a new person that takes this wonderful little, like make it your own and go, right, as we go. So in some people in this endeavor, as I'm facing this, knowing I'm coming to this conclusion, I got some phone calls. Some people didn't. For those that didn't, like, I still love the hell out of you and the likes. My recommendation for various reasons, and my recommendation only holds one vote for clearing this, is Jack Norton for this role. A, there's been a lot of feedback. Somebody, if he's willing to accept it. Hey, there's been a lot of feedback. You need dirty hands and dirty boots. Someone that hits the soil. Check. I mean, someone that is in ag, committed to, and all of those thou shalls effectively that we went through. Check. Need someone that's willing to do it. Check. Which is an important thing. And then I think that will be supported through. I have no idea how this vote goes. And again, I'm one vote with a recommendation on this. Jack has graciously said, if this board says yes to this, I will accept. And he didn't do it after the first week, which I like because he's thinking about it. He didn't do it after the second week, which I like because he's thinking about it. Paul, hey, where are you? I'm going to bug you. Okay, we're in this phase. And like he gave it the good requisite thought. And he has said, yes, should this board and body want this to happen, I will step up and do this role. So I believe Jack is positioned well for this. As we go through this, I would ask us to waive the rule that's only a chairman's rule of don't chair two committees. For this little step forward, Jack chairs the solar subcommittee and he chairs this committee. That's a violation of only the principles that I set forth, but I think he can handle it, will do a good job. But I also implore, should this happen, Mr. Norton to try not to have that, to try and find someone else in there as we go, because I think that sets the right structure to support strategy or to support the purpose, powers, and duties of this committee.
So are you making a nomination?
I have made a personal nomination, yes.
Or you wouldn't put a second?
I still have this monologue microphone in front of me. I haven't made a motion, which becomes a different ministerial act as we go. But I think, you know, keep that momentum alive, keep working with those that want to get butts in the seats, whoever it is, however this lands. And I want to thank you all for what you've given to this. And I grew as a human in this role. I thank you all for what you've done in there. With that, I'll violate another one of my principles that the chair should not make motions. I will make a motion that we elect Jack Norton as our next chair of this organization.
Second.
We have a second by Mr. Moore. Now, please take our time on any questions, clarifications, and the likes. I don't want to rush this home. So now is the time. There's a motion and a second on the table. I'm going to go around the room and look at you and say, now is your time.
I'm okay with it because you gave the backstory and Jack's not taking this lightheartedly, and you know, conveyed how he's thought about it. And I'm sure you guys discussed, you know, the importance of the role. So I'm good with it.
Jack is really serious and he wears a cap, which proves he's an ag. But I will be thrilled to watch him apply many of the skills and things he's learned in the California Ag Leadership Program in this committee.
Yeah, full-hearted support. Definitely wish I had more capacity, but I will be happy to vice chair alongside you.
Capable and willingness. I look forward, so I'm fine.
Please.
I can't be sued. I think it's Moore. He's been here a long time and he's got a lot of skin in the game. And, I think he'll represent the ag community well.
100% split.
Yeah, I've worked with Jack before he was on the Ag Advisory Committee and then afterwards. And I found that he finds his place and then he helps other people find their place.
Really support.
Checks all the boxes for me.
Checks boxes for me too.
Do you know what you're getting into?
I think I do, but I can't be certain.
Good for me.
Well, I'd just like to say thank you, everyone, for your support before we take this vote. Very grateful. And I believe that anybody else who thinks that they would want to chair this committee should also come forward. Carl, you've done an amazing job in these 2 years about that you have been chairing the committee. One of the things I really like is how you always try to ground us and bring us back to our purpose, powers, and duties. And I can commit to everybody that I will try to do a good job following in Carl's footsteps and doing my best to help this committee enhance the economic viability of agriculture and environmental conservation.
Thank you. We'll go to the room of public forum on this item. No hands. Yes, we have raised hand.
I'm looking at your LinkedIn profile, and we are both graduates of Cal State East Bay in computer science, and I also studied business. And
that is fascinating.
Not only looking through your, I'm fascinated by your extensive experience as a member of the public and possibly helping out this committee.
Thank you, Andrew.
Anybody online, like come?
No raised hands online.
So the motion is second. I think it's very clear what that motion is. All in favor, say aye. Anybody opposed, please make yourself known. With humility, happiness, and respect.
Okay, so
you still have to show up, Carl.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm taking over the gavel. I think that we are closing item 5C. Just ask that everybody give me a little grace for my first chairship. I might struggle through this a little bit, but I've had a great model watching Carl these past couple of years and everyone else before him as well. So moving on to item six, we are to have a brief hold it to 20-minute discussion about potential topics for a future rural wildlife preparedness presentation. And that would be, this presentation would be done by OES, ACFD, and Cal Fire staff. Is that correct?
Yeah, I can get some context on this one. So at our last meeting, which I believe was in July, toward the end of the meeting, a few members brought up the idea of having OES and Fire come and present to the committee and potentially more broadly to the agricultural community about fire preparedness, evacuation, large animal evacuation, all of those things. And so rather than me passing that information along to those folks, I thought it would be better to have those folks come here and hear it directly from you. So that is the purpose of this meeting, this item. So we have on the line folks from Cal Fire, OES, and so we have Brent Laser from Office of Emergency Services. I'm going to unmute you. We've got Ed Orr from Cal Fire. I'm going to go ahead and unmute you, Ed. I can promote both of you to panelists as well if you'd like to join that way. So I'm going to go ahead and promote you to panelists if you can hear me. Go ahead and join via the panelist link. And if there's anyone else in the attendees in the room who is from either Cal Fire, AC Fire, or OES, you could raise your hand and I'll promote you as well. So I'm not sure if John or Carlos. Oh, cool, Carlos, okay. So Carlos, promoting you to panelist as well. And Ed is a panelist, so that should be everybody. Unrelated to this, I just wanted to state for the record that Veronica Rivera, who is our newest ex officio member from NRCS, is also present, dialing in online. So I just wanted to note that. Should we go ahead and do quick introductions for the folks online? So
yes.
Ed, would you be interested in introducing yourself?
Hi, good evening. My name is Ed Ory. I'm the unit forester for the Santa Clara unit of Cal Fire. And we cover all of Alameda, Contra Costa, and Santa Clara counties and the western portion of Stanislaus and San Joaquin counties.
Thanks, Ed. Brent, you want to go ahead and introduce yourself?
Good evening, everybody. Brent Blazer. I'm the emergency manager for Alameda County Office of Emergency Services, and look forward to hearing more of what we're looking to do here tonight.
Thanks, Brent. And then Carlos is rejoining as a panelist. Carlos, are you with ACFD? Go ahead and unmute, Carlos.
Good evening, everybody. Carlos Alcantar, Community Risk Reduction Assistant Chief here in the Santa Clara unit. I just started my new position, so I'm excited to learn new things. Other than that, good to see you guys.
Thank you so much, Carlos, for being here. I don't think we have anyone from ACFD on the line, so I could just pass along information to them.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, so now, as Ali had said in the July meeting, we had some members had requested that we possibly have a rural wildlife preparedness presentation. So I ask that members, let's talk about what these potential topics that they might present on, what those might be. Does anybody, can I give the floor to anybody? Chuck, we are, right now, we're looking for potential topics for a future rural wildlife wildfire preparedness presentation.
I think there's quite a few things. One is an evacuation plan that we would have in a location where animals would go and be housed. A method of sharing this information with the ranchers and farmers in the area that have livestock that they would need to move somewhere quickly. Some of the areas that are in, particularly this area, the canyonlands, we have a very poor way of reaching them as they don't have cell service in a lot of the areas, particularly Coal Canyon, and I believe parts of Eden Canyon and also Palomares in the middle of Palomares Canyon. Some way of maybe getting the cell tower people who are regularly applying for conditional use permits to maybe lean on them a little bit to improve the cell reception in these areas would be one thing that we could do. Maybe get some cell tower people in here. I know yesterday we reviewed Verizon cell tower for a conditional use permit, and they applied for a 10-year extension. Well, and it's at the end of Palomares Canyon. Come on, guys, half of the canyon can't get cell reception, so what are you going to do to help? So I think we need to lean on these guys a little bit if we could get some help from somebody in that area. Let's see. You know, I don't know if anybody's paid their fire insurance in the last year on a ranch, but most of us have gone from $5,000 a year to $15,000 or $20,000 a year. So how are they evaluating what are risk areas? Because we've never had a risk of a fire in some of these canyons, but yet their fire insurance has gone through the ceiling. So, but when you talk to the insurance company says you're in a risk area and you're in a certain zone. Well, who put us in that zone? So these are some of the things I think that we should talk about in order to certainly help an emergency situation if we ever had one. And another is to help the financial situation of ranchers and farmers.
Thank you very much, Chuck.
Yeah, along those lines, I think there are ways that you can mitigate the fire risk. You know, as an example, if you graze the cattle hard around your house, right, you know, at the end of when the grass is turning, and you eliminate all that brush, you know, all of a sudden you're a lot less at risk because there's no fuel. Somehow, and the other thing, in my particular case, because I live in the middle of nowhere, I put a sprinkler system around my house to water the field so that should there be a fire, the grass is all going to be wet, won't spread easily to my house. And so as an example, those are two things that I do personally. Why can't CAL FIRE send out a team, if requested, to grade the residents, the property that says, hey, this guy is well prepared, this guy's not well prepared, or this guy's poorly prepared, and give us a rating of preparedness that we could then hypothetically take to our insurer and say, hey, look, you know, we should get a break because we're doing things that make sense to mitigate the risk. And what would be the agency that would likely give you that score? I think CAL FIRE would be the likely place to do it. If you could implement something like that countywide, I think it'd be good for a lot of us.
And another quick point is for CAL FIRE, a lot of our properties have stock ponds. And years ago—
Or a lot of water tanks.
Yeah. And somebody told me years ago that CAL FIRE knew some up before, but in 19 years, I've never seen a CAL FIRE person on my property to look and see if we had a pond. And they could use to draw water from to fight a fire. So I just think that we need a better connection as ranchers and farmers with CAL FIRE or whoever our agency would be for our area.
Yes, Dave.
I agree with Chuck on towers for communication, or I would add security, because there are some in some areas, rural areas, they serve both purposes. But I'd also like to hear some comments on the mutual use of rural roads, ranch roads, for fire suppression, like in the Ohlone Wilderness area that San Francisco Water District owns between Livermore and Pleasanton, say, the Lake Del Valle and Sonola, and clear over into Santa Clara County. and Levin Park. It's a, every once in a while we have a fire, and Cal Fire comes out and puts their bulldozers up ravines to make a fire break. And you all know I'm a trail guy. The aftermath often becomes a usable trail for the public. So after a fire, we can start using branch fire roads more, and sometimes they cut a new fire break that can become a trail. The other thing, and it's water, and I've got a friend at a Sunol meeting tonight going to ask a question on fire hydrants. We've got a couple isolated plumbing aqueducts, Hetch Hetchy and East Bay Mud, that come close or through our valley. I know where a lot of the turnouts are. I've taken tours for some of you last year on the South Bay Aqueduct. And has Cal Fire ever thought about putting off of those aqueducts a fire hydrant? Because there are turnouts on the Ohlone for the Hetch Hetchy system, I know. And it's just a dumb question. I have never seen any hydrants up there, but there's water up there, and I believe it's under significant pressure. It might serve fire suppression reasons. I completely support grazing because the park districts have large staffs literally helping grazers rotate, manage the landscape by grazing appropriately. And it's above my pay grade to know what that means. People like Karen know it much better than me.
Thank you, Dave.
Jack, I have interest in learning more about the the correct name is a Diablo Fire Safe Council, which includes our county. And it's a council that we know hardly anything about, much less what they're doing. And I wonder how we need to know more what they're doing, and whether, you know, they have a plan as well. And I'm particularly interested in chipping programs and the funding to make that work for landowners and rural residents who have interest in participating.
Did you say chipping programs?
Shipping.
Shipping.
Chipping.
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 Like chipping brush.
Chip.
Yeah.
I'd be interested in knowing what kind of partnerships that the Cal Fire and all that have established for that communication plan, as well as, you know, the locations. And, you know, I'm working with each of the cities around the hotels. Now, it's got nothing to do with ag, but I can get the word out to 42 hotels like that. Mm-hmm. So the question is, you know, what are the other partnerships that are connected to the ag? And I was wondering, Chuck, about the fairgrounds, now that you have that big, beautiful new barn, and if that would ever be an option to help out during a crisis.
We have been a rescue facility for some time at the fairgrounds. We have about 630 stalls, and we have a significant area for storage. And certainly as the farm develops, we'll have probably more. But I can't speak for our fairgrounds board, but I can just say that in the past, we've been a resource. Cal Fire, when they had the fires. So, the fairgrounds has always been there.
Yeah, especially with all the barn, the stables.
But I don't think people know it. And that's the challenge, is developing a network of how we reach these people. You know, a lot of our ranchers and farmers have tons of equipment. They could put fire trails and roads in with minutes if they knew
what
they
could
help.
Yeah.
So it just seems to be, we need a little bit of a collaborative effort to where we could work together, and certainly By doing so, we reduce our operating costs of these insurance policies and get insured.
I have a question for you, Chuck. So you say that, a lot of folks you feel don't know that the fair is an emergency retreat for animals. It seems like a lot of folks having animals would have an interaction, some interaction with the ag department. Is it possible that the ag department would be a collaborator to disseminate that information?
I couldn't speak for that, but our CEO, Jerome, is very receptive to working with the community as a whole. I would imagine they could take a phone call from our supervisor and say, hey, we have an emergency, we have an earthquake, we have a fire. Can we open up some stalls and put together a program? I know we've done that in the past. We had a train wreck in Niles, and all the people were hauled to the fairgrounds from the train wreck about 3 years ago. We've done a lot of things like that. Cal Fire's used the fairgrounds in the past. So, but once again, we need some way of communicating. And I would imagine the Office of Emergency Services would be the first choice or direction to go with this. That's their title.
Absolutely.
And Brett's on the phone. Would feed be an issue? I mean, I would assume you need to feed.
That, you know, that gets worked out with donations usually.
All the animals.
Getting them alive first. And safe.
Alive and then feed them.
Okay, guys, I think we have about just a handful of minutes left on this issue. Allie, would it be wise for us to, since the point of this item is to inform OES, ACFD, and CAL FIRE staff about potential topics for a future presentation, could we hear from them to see if any of these ideas have sparked some imagination in them?
Definitely, yeah, and we could maybe also have them ask any clarifying questions.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Do we do a public comment later, or did you want to do public comment? Up to you.
Let's, well, Andrew, please go right ahead, and then we'll go to public comment.
Well, bells were ringing for me because in Sunol, we're facing almost all of these at our MAC. We have a communication issue that into our Box Canyon, you literally cannot have cell phones in certain places. We're actually doing some work with that. We have a relationship with Diable FireSafe, and so we could leverage off that. East Bay Regional Parks is one of the premier horse rescue organizations. They have their fire department knows how to do horse rescue, and it's really delightful to know that they're here. I have moved my horses in a disaster potential to the fairgrounds. It is a great place for us to work with. And then, you know, we're dealing with the insurance issues and anyway, the communication issue that, literally things that Tracy and Richard and Jerry and Chuck all brought up are all happening in our MAC. And if I can offer the opportunity to give you things from that would help promote this communication, I'm happy to do that.
Thank you. So our guests on the Zoom, the reps from OES, ACFD, and CAL FIRE, do you all have any clarifying questions to any of these ideas that have been submitted so far? We've probably thrown about 20 ideas at you, and if you'd like, we could recite some of them as well.
Looks like Brent is off mute. Go ahead, Brent.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Go ahead, Brent.
Okay, I just wanted to make sure you could hear me. So we got a lot of different ideas in a lot of different areas. I think it's going to require a number of speakers. You know, if we're looking at, I think I was told you're just looking for 2 hours revolving around wildfire evacuation planning and such. But some of these topics like insurance, I think are very intriguing. I don't know. I would have to look into seeing how that, I think the question is, how do we get there to to explain exactly how these readings are happening and who influencing that. And then, you know, looking at how CAL FIRE, if they even play a role in that sort of thing, I would imagine that's a state function also. The clarifying questions, I guess I heard a little bit about hotels, fairground, or the communication plans regarding hotels. I didn't really understand that. So if anybody could clarify on that one. Ultimately, I think if the group could maybe continue to gather questions, whether it's in this forum or afterwards, and get them to me in the next week or so, I can work with CAL FIRE and such to try to round out and maybe go back and forth with a few ideas. And so we make sure we bring the right presenters. I promise you, if you leave it to me to speak to you for 2 hours, you guys are going to be bored in like 10 minutes. So I think we got to come up with a way to make this engaging for you. And that, you know, for the different residents out there and whoever else might be interested, and we make sure we have the right people to answer your questions. Some of this, the fairgrounds, I think would be, it maybe not doesn't look smooth, but I think we do have a good procedure for, we actually met with them not too long ago for opening the fairgrounds when it gets open and things and get things moving. So I think that's just a matter of educating the public and making sure you're aware of what our processes are. Let me pass the baton to a few others, and I think maybe if Ed and Carlos and maybe some other partners, once we get some more questions maybe rounded out from you, I could pull together a meeting with them to kind of square up, and then, you know, whoever's that you want us to communicate with the MAC, we can then pitch back the idea of what we're thinking, you know, and then kind of round it out for the actual presentation.
Okay, thank you, Brent. So, Ali, is it within your capability to write up, summarize what's been discussed and share that with the...
I'll make sure with the executive committee.
Okay.
And then just tell me if there's any feedback. Does it sound okay?
Okay, yeah, that sounds perfect. And
Ed's off mute.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, yeah, we'd love to hear from Ed. If there's... And this will take a little time, so if there's any other ideas you all would like to share forward to Ali, and yeah, she can include them.
Yeah, for sure.
Actually,
Ed, the floor is yours.
This one, so to get it right, I had made a cell for communication, an evacuation plan, shelter, and a risk insurance.
Ed, would you like to speak?
Well, it's an awful lot to unpack.
Absolutely.
I think getting with Ali and getting the list of issues, questions, and then we will put together a concise response for you, a presentation, and educate you on a little bit more about us and what we can do, how we normally operate, and alongside our partners, and perhaps consider including Diablo Fire Safe Council in this response as well, because they're involved with a number of other things that would be good for you to be aware of as well.
Indeed, thank you. Can we move to public comment now so we can wrap this item up?
So yeah, Carlos, did you have anything you wanted to add?
No, I don't.
Thank you, Carlos.
There's no raised hands on
the thing. Okay. Any members of the public here to speak on this item? Yes.
And we probably think Ali and through the council this has on their road and this is something that's popular. Looking at to evacuate people. So I just wanted to offer them. So thank you so much. We in a program also have simulations and interviews and we don't have a playground and I've done in mentions of being organizations and two
we can't hear over here.
Can't hear a word she's saying.
Hopefully some of this is recorded so that we can see it in our minutes.
Understood.
Maybe
is it possible for you to stand up?
There's somebody to summarize.
So, yes, my voice is soft. But I just wanted to very briefly say, I'm Louise Comfort from the University of California, Berkeley. We have been working for 3 years on a National Science Foundation funded project that has looked at evacuation, especially. It's an interdisciplinary project done forensic modeling to determine how long it takes to evacuate certain risky zones. We've also done a survey, to do a survey of the residents of the Sioux. And I've done an analysis of networks such relationships among the public and private and the nonprofit organizations, and this includes the Diablo Privacy Council, which has been very. So this is publicly funded. The information and modeling domain gates are all available and
making. Okay, thank you. So just to try and recap, I'm sorry, I won't do it justice, but as a representative of UC Berkeley, they have been studying evacuation times, gaming how evacuations might work throughout the county, and particularly at Kilcarry Road and in Sonol in general. And she is willing to share this information that they have developed. Would that be as a presentation, or would that be as a body of work that you shared with the committee?
Well, it could be presentation. The mini games, you can actually access when you're phone and your laptop and your iPad. You can play them in groups, you can play them individually. That's not really accessible. The traffic modeling, you really have to show it on the screen for you to be able to do it. But the intent of the modeling is to show different alternatives in the actual area. So we have both the geolocation models and we have the working that we would take to a meeting where we can play it together and the ideas. Okay. Options that they have for communication and to help them develop their own.
Okay, well, that sounds fascinating. I think what we can do is give your information to Allie, and on the one hand, she can disseminate those links to the board as a whole, and we can also offline discuss how this might be synergistic with this potential wildfire presentation as well. Thank you very much for your input. Is there anything else from the public?
I don't see any raised hands.
Okay. All right. So barring any more public input, I think we can close this agenda item. And so
thank you, Ed and Brent and Carlos.
Yes, thank you very much.
I'll follow.
Good night.
Good night.
Thank you for coming.
Thank you.
Moving on to agenda item number 7, we have a presentation on ag worker housing solutions being given by Christina Murillo Barrick, Andrew Miller, Sheila Berry as well, and maybe somebody from UCA and our representative, right?
Yeah, so Christina has done the table. Hi, Christina.
Hi, Christina. Thank you so much for coming.
Thank you. And
I'm promoting you as a panelist right now.
Okay. Hi, joining the panel. I should be able to share screen, which means that we should all look at the pretty PowerPoint I put together. All right. Is that as big as a guess? All right, I hope they can hear me on Zoom. hopefully there will be weird echo. All right. Hi, everybody. I'm really excited to be here today. My name is Christina Mubijo-Berek. I go by she or ella. Spanish. I'm here with Sheila Berry, my colleague. And we were asked to look into farm worker housing solutions, and we conducted some surveys. I will be talking about that today. My title, for those of you who don't know, I serve as the inaugural Black, Indigenous, and People of Color Community Development Advisor for four counties. So I serve with numerous underserved, historically underserved communities, which are represented very highly in our unincorporated area. And I'm very excited to be here. So I'm gonna get started. This presentation will be available to you all for reference. Sheila and I looked at a lot of data and a lot of numbers, and I tried to synthesize it in a way that was clear and fairly clean. So I didn't include a lot of the data or tables in this presentation, but we do have it. So just so you know, the science is there, but I was more focused on the communication side of things. So that's what you will see in this presentation today. And I'm gonna try to keep it to about 15 minutes, so give myself time. Okay. So today we're gonna be talking about our University of California Cooperative Extension research findings, which we have been doing this research alongside the county and the Ag Committee. We're going to talk about some of the recommendations that came out of those findings. I'm going to show you four examples with lots of pictures of different housing solutions that I took a look at. In three of the cases, I was able to walk and check them out in person. In one, I mostly took information from the website, but also had an in-depth interview with one of the leads on that project. And then I'm also gonna talk about some exciting next steps that kind of came up and conversations that have been happening around some of those survey findings and ideas on how to integrate those to help the solutions become real. So here is our first research finding, to probably nobody's surprise. Yes, there is a strong housing need for ag workers, farm workers, and land stewards. We are not unusual in unincorporated Alameda County. This information, I should say, is coming from two different surveys, one which was over 80 participants and was sent out earlier this year, had a variety of questions. And the second, we had a more targeted survey that looked at our critical housing need, which I will talk about in a moment. But some of the key takeaways across both surveys, and these are the data from the second one, over half of respondents said yes, and we responded landowners and operators, primarily because they are the folks that are on the land consistently, and we have their mailing addresses, so we send the surveys to them through the mail. We got a very high response rate. She has a lot of experience with this, and she did present these findings at a former meeting for you all. So we're kind of building on that. But yes, there is a strong housing need for farm workers, ag workers, and land stewards. And I'm just gonna take a minute to explain, those are three groups, but in California, there's an emphasis on thinking about farm workers because of their vulnerable status. But we expanded that to think about ag workers more broadly and land stewards, so folks that are on the land that might include other fields aside from like strictly agriculture. So that might include folks that are taking care of open spaces, or folks who are managing for fire or for water. And for it even includes, for example, folks that are practicing traditional ecological knowledge practices or indigenous practices and stewarding the landscapes for like acorns or native foods or plants or basketry materials. So we wanted to have a very expansive survey so that this information hopefully could be used to the benefit of all of those groups and not just farmers. So we're centering on one group that's particularly vulnerable, and then we're broadening solutions that can serve multiple different groups. So operations with more numerous workers or with a diversity of agricultural activities anticipated having the most positive effects from developing affordable housing access. So that was one note. Another finding was that developing affordable housing opportunities is associated with positive impacts. I think we only got one respondent that was like, it might have a negative impact, but overwhelmingly the majority responded, yes, we think developing more affordable housing will have positive effects on worker health and well-being, on reduced commute burdens. Some of those commute burdens were like 3 hours or over 100 miles in some cases to get folks on site. And another note is the positive effects. Also, the operators talked about how they thought this would positively affect their business. We found that housing needs do vary across agricultural operation type, because we asked folks to tell us about what kind of operation they were running. And then Sheila ranked those in terms of like what the highest needs were based on the number of employees and the availability of housing. So we have here in bright orange, the most critical we found were nurseries. Now nurseries, there aren't that many in unincorporated Alameda County, but there was a high need identified for that group. Another critical housing need group were wineries and vineyards, which some of you probably are familiar with because of the seasonality of the harvest. And we found the specific months of the year there were really critical housing needs. We had a moderate housing need in mixed operations. So if there was like equestrian and other happening simultaneously, there was a mix. And the one area that had a very well-addressed housing need, according to our survey, was equestrian, which was, I thought, very interesting and good to point out, because there might be some lessons learned from how that is playing out within the county that we can learn from equestrian. Okay. Another finding was that there was interest in both on-site and off-site housing. And this is by part of the operators who stated that they had a strong interest, particularly in temporary housing. And the reasons they were asked to tell us a little bit about why and how, what the expected benefits of temporary housing would be. And many of them stated that meeting seasonal labor needs, adapting to weather and market conditions, meeting critical harvest deadlines, and complying with labor regulations were some of the expected benefits of having an increase in temporary housing. As I said, there was interest in both temporary housing and on-site housing and off-site housing. This slide is talking specifically about temporary and off-site housing solutions, which we identified some priority geographies for that, being Livermore as well as Sunol. And then the peak housing needs by month were primarily September. That's gonna be when vineyards and wineries are having a lot of their workers come in, and also June and July. So there was some seasonal times when we thought it would be particularly high demand for temporary and off-site housing. On-site housing was also of interest. Most landowners agreed that this would benefit their operations, and their reasoning that they mentioned was it was essential to the sustainability of their business in particular. It helped It would help them attract and retain a skilled workforce, which I think many of us know that skilled workforce in agriculture is fairly competitive, and many of them have to commute really long distances for specific skills, particularly related to vineyards and wineries. Another reason was improving worker satisfaction as well as productivity, making operations more competitive, and supporting the long-term retention of their workers. So quite a number of benefits there. We asked landowners and operators if they would be interested in on-site housing, affordable housing solution. And actually, one-fourth of them said that they would be interested in exploring these options, which is, I think, actually a relatively high percentage, 1 out of 4. And then we also asked them to rank specific housing types, and we numbered quite a few. And the ones that they seemed the most interested in were accessory dwelling units or ADUs, as well as trailers and mobile housing, which we know that some of those are already in use at the moment. There wasn't so much interest in the tiny home, but I added a note on the tiny home because the tiny home, as you will see, is very popular right now. And the tiny home is a bit like the 2025 trailer, I would argue. And then another area that seemed to be of interest was temporary housing, which is not necessarily a housing type, but it was worth mentioning.
Would you mind just giving a brief description of what temporary housing qualifies as temporary?
Yes. So when we distinguish between temporary, it just has to do with the number of days. So we divide the workforce per California labor law into temporary and permanent. And it just has to do with the number of days that folks are at a specific site. And so because of that, we asked about temporary versus permanent structure. So out of these, you could consider like a trailer or a mobile home or a tiny home is more of a temporary solution because you can move it, whereas an accessory dwelling unit, you would consider a permanent structure because you're not moving it off site. So there were some options that were given that were more temporary, like, and others that might be off site, an ag worker housing hotel, for example, that would be accessible to folks like during the fluctuations, but there were others that were on site and permanent.
But Christine, I think part of the confusion might be, when we're using temporary housing, we're talking about housing for temporary workers.
Yes.
As opposed to, which could be housing that moves, but that's not what makes it temporary. What makes it temporary is the workers are temporary as opposed to the housing
being temporary.
Right?
Yes.
What's the difference between a tiny home and an ADU? Isn't an ADU a tiny home as well?
Sheila went down this rabbit hole a bit.
It could be.
ADUs typically are going to be within the building envelope. So they're on a foundation. A tiny home can be on wheels. It can also just be a very small structure on a footprint. But the tiny has to do with the dimensions.
Is there a square feet involved? Is a tiny home 500 and a 80,000? Yeah.
Not necessarily. It has more to do with the footprint, whether it's on a current footprint. And I'll show you some examples and hopefully it'll clarify it. But we could get in the weeds about it. But here, for the purposes of this presentation, like almost all the tiny homes that I saw that were being built were on wheels. And the reason for that is because you don't have to go through the same permitting process for a tiny home on wheels.
Yep.
You can work around a lot of the bureaucratic.
But you call that a mobile home too, right?
Right. Yeah, the mobile home I would say is more designed to like be on the highway, but anyways, we could get into it, but
there's a couple of hiccups that we have in the ag problems. One is most of them gravitate towards something on wheels, because if you don't have wheels, it becomes through HUD, and it has to be registered through HUD and licensed. Okay, And once you open that door, then your environmental health system steps in and says, where's your leach field? And then you open up a whole can of worms and costs. So you'll find that most ranchers and farmers find that temporary housing for permanent workers is really what reality is. You know, even though we'd like to say temporary housing is for temporary employees, it's reality is it's temporary housing for permanent employees. And it's largely because of the way we've set up to be governed. Most people in the urban areas, they don't think about septic systems because they have city sewers and they have city water. But when you are in a rural area and you put in a bathroom, it just opens up a can of worms that can be very, very costly for the person to a point where they just don't want it. That's the reason why we have temporary housing or houses for permanent housing.
Yeah, and the implication is that pathways that help us avoid all that mess which are very desirable.
Correct. We have building envelopes that we talked about ADUs. Most of the ag folks have children or mothers and fathers that are living in those ADUs already. And ADUs are limited to 1,200 square feet maximum. Or 25% of your original, I think it's 25% of your building that you currently have. So you get one or the other choice. So most of the ADUs are taken up by family members already. Because most of these ranchers and farmers, people that have them, they got them from their mom and dad because they can't afford to buy them today.
Yeah, committee member Trex put me in a good position to segue into this slide, which is all about some of the barriers that operators and landowners talked about. The number one set of barriers was zoning laws and restrictions. So permits, anything related to that, as illustrated by the comments, are really a major concern. And they're getting in the way of folks building on site. And I think this is a really interesting point that you're bringing up, which is we have some housing that is available that is temporary by design, but is being used permanently. And that's a way to segue, to not have to deal with a lot of these zoning restrictions. Another piece that folks cited was building costs, again, permits and access issues. I just wanted to include some of the comments that we got, whether they're true or not. This is how people felt about Measure D limiting their ability to build on their land. And they mentioned some of these challenges, again, costs, locations, financing, cost of construction. And one person pointed out a solution would be to study affordable housing with modular construction, which is exactly what we're gonna get into in the next couple of slides. So I pulled up some recommendations here that Sheila and I extracted from the data. So just to give four kind of hopefully concise points, recommendations would include zoning reform or streamlining processes for building affordable housing because we do see a lot of perceived or real barriers to ag housing development. Another recommendation is to develop collaborative housing models that explore shared housing options, particularly in urban Lawrence and rural areas, geographically speaking, as well as exploring seasonal housing programs. And as I mentioned before, September, June, and July are some of the most the highest need during those months. And supporting ADU or tiny home development. Those could provide an on-site solution, particularly if this one four is paired with number one. There's a streamlined process. And that's been done in different cities throughout California where the county will provide kind of a cookbook of like, so you want to make an ADU? Like here, come into the county office. We'll give you a couple options. You can shop for it. We'll give you some folks that are able to build it for you. We'll line up the permitting process. And so folks are able to develop these things fairly efficiently and with a lot of clarity. Okay, now I'm going to show you some housing solutions. So we have, the first is from Post, or Peninsula Open Space Trust, which is in San Mateo County, which has some similar conditions to here in Alameda. They built 4 new mobile home units, as well as they also had a county-sponsored forgivable loan program, which helped really incentivize doing renovations on current building envelopes. And the land trust itself actually supported in this effort. So their primary communities they're serving are ag workers, farm workers, land stewards, families, and also in unincorporated or rural areas. Then we have an urban example of a program called Youth Employment Program in Oakland. They built 12 tiny homes in a very short time frame. And they also have this 30 dorm model, and they have it in an urban area, and they are providing housing specifically for young adults, some of whom are land stewards through Civic Corps, if you all have heard of it. Perhaps they feed a lot into the pipeline of the East Bay Regional Parks Fuels Crews and Trails Crews. These are all majority early career folks, job trainees, and folks working on their high school credentials. And one really key piece about that is they also have wraparound services. So they're serving the whole person while they are giving them housing. So here are the cool pictures. Some of these are taken from the websites, and I put in the slide, in case you want to look it up later. But this is Post, Peninsula Open Space. So the top is the picture of their farmhouse as it was. And then the bottom is the picture of their renovated farm worker housing, which they're doing their ribbon cutting. So you could see there that they've remodeled and they're working off of a current housing envelope so they can get through a lot of the permitting a lot faster. And they provided financial assistance as well as organizational support. So they've been really successful and very pleased with the outcomes of this program. Here's a quote from their—
question.
Yeah.
That was one housing facility to serve one agricultural entity, not one housing facility that serves multiple.
So they actually have several, because the loan forgiveness program, they started renovating properties and they would finish one and then start another one. So here on their website, they talk about they installed 4 new 3-bedroom, 2-bath mobile home units. So this is at the time they posted this blog, and they're
serving one farm.
One farm.
That's one farm. Yeah.
You know, one farm. Okay. Thank you.
For that specific project, but they're actually working on.
Okay.
So they've used that to do more projects throughout the county. Yeah. And they also worked on this domestic well, a new septic system, extending electricity, fire hydrants, and improved fire access, which I wonder how that affects their insurance. I would guess it probably helps reduce the cost. But so if you want to check out more about that, I just put the website. Here is the YEP program. You can see here they're super colorful tiny homes all lined up. They have 12 single unit tiny homes, so they can provide their youth with these open air kitchen, laundry. They have bathrooms. They have they are able to bring folks off, if they're unhoused, they're able to give them access to housing, which is a really high need, especially during COVID. A lot of young folks were they didn't have access to housing. And they have these services. So this is their building where they're enrolled in, they're finishing up their high school credential, learning about how to get into the construction industry, the food industry, as well as they have folks that commute to the Civic Corps programs. This is a building that they were given through a foundation, and this is a picture of their dorms, which they have these really nice new dorms and these indoor bathrooms. So this is more of a dorm model. the dorm has, you know, like a dining area, a kitchen, and a social area as well. So it's pretty nice. They had their youth actually design the space alongside them and pick the colors like that. I have two more projects to show you here. ICAS El Campo is a nonprofit in Contra Costa County, unincorporated. They built four tiny homes on unincorporated ag land alongside an operator's on his property. And those are primarily working with farm workers, families, ag workers. They also provide wraparound services. And then there's another site called Goodness Village in Livermore, which provides also a tiny home village, also on former ag land, a former dairy. And they work really closely with elders, unhoused individuals, and also provide wraparound services. They have 24-hour care.
So, by the way, Goodness Village received a $5 million grant from Swalwell's office.
Oh,
so
okay.
Just let you know, there's money out there.
Yeah, a lot of these organizations have found the money themselves. So this, I'm finding that it's actually quite effective to partner with nonprofits, and Goodness Village is a faith community because they have it within their mission, and they hire and end up doing these projects. So you can kind of, if you can pair up with a partner, it should be a really effective way to get funding and get these projects going. So the IJAS El Campo group is a trusted organizational partner. They work with farm workers actually from all over California and the Central Valley. They provide culturally and linguistically appropriate services. And they also have these wraparound services. So they connect folks to nutrition and all sorts of different services that they might need as a family. They partnered with this landowner and they allowed them to use their hookups. So they had like a little trailer park on site and they said, hey, can we come in? We noticed that your trailer park is like a little bit falling apart, like not really, they didn't stay up to code, but they wanted to give a housing option that had like supported human dignity in a more complete way. So they found funding to build these cute little tiny homes that I thought. So they are trying to build a community. I put the emojis over their faces because I didn't ask them if I could use their pictures, but IJAS El Campo gave me these pictures. And as you can see, you've got a family, you've got a person who's kind of older, and you have these tiny homes, which costs between $75,000 and $90,000. They have solar panels and they were built within 4 months. And designed locally by Pacifica Tiny Homes. So they've been very popular in creating a lot of housing, and they're really sweet. Like I would live in this. They offer them up to farm workers who are working on site in this orchard, and they're given 2 years minimum to live in the space. They are very like dignity focused, so they're not gonna make families leave at that time frame, but they do give them services to help them offsite when they're ready. They also provide them with like a high yield savings account. So they provide them with subsidized rent, and then they do put some of that money into a savings account so that they have access to it. As you might be able to see here, these are actually technically vehicles. You can kind of see the tires are here. So all of these have a streamlined process in terms of permitting, which is really interesting. We see a lot of that. And despite how small they are, they have laundry and kitchen and showers all within that little area. They've been very successful and they really want to continue the work of building affordable housing. And we've actually been chatting with them, some of the members of the committee here, to see if we can find further ways to partner and expand the work. That's their website. And lastly, we've got Goodness Village in Livermore, which I can remind you is one of the key geographic areas where we found the need was highest. They have 28 single occupancy permanent tiny homes. They are also on wheels, as you will see in a moment. And they're in Livermore. Here are the dimensions to those tiny homes if you want to check them out. They're 8x20 and 13 and a half feet high, or 160 square feet. So that's the definition they're kind of working on. And they actually have a HVAC as well as a porch, and many of them are ADA compliant, so that folks in wheelchairs and with walkers can still use them, which I thought was really impressive. They provide this housing for folks who generally are either unhoused or at risk of being without housing, and they do have a screening process and they do prioritize applicants. They also provide some really nice comprehensive trauma-informed care so that they're making sure that folks have various supports. And these are some nice pictures of their housing, and the yellow house in the top over there is their original little farmhouse that they renovated. So they have services open there 24/7 for folks if they need to come in kitchen or hang out, but everybody's got their own little tiny. The company they use is called Gainbridge Tiny Homes, so it's a different. All right, and now these are some next steps. So there are some ideas about a Livermore Food Hub project, which we're kind of exploring to see if we can support housing and workforce. There are some sources of funding from GoBiz, which is a state agency tied to California Jobs First, which used to be known as CERF. So we're exploring potentially putting together an application for that. Another idea is the Sustainable Ag Lands Conservation Program, or SALT, which does provide kind of planning money for grants. That one would be due in like February of 2026. So if there's interest in that, the county can apply, as well as numerous entities. And for the GoBiz funding, there's different folks that can apply for that one. But we've gotten quite a bit of interest in doing this work and exploring where to access funding for these projects. That is me. I'm Christina. I'm here to work for you all, and I'm happy to talk further about housing and affordable housing opportunities. That is my contact information, and thank you so much. I don't know if we have time for questions. Allie, I will.
We have time for a few questions open to the.
And I'll share this presentation.
Thank you very much. Great. Anyone from the committee like to ask any questions or make any comment?
Great presentation. I apologize for stepping out. It seems like I'm always the single dad on these AAC meetings, but for all great work, and thank you for, because that was enlightening and very educational. So appreciation.
Thank you for your presentation. So in terms of the next steps that you identified, what are those funds going towards? Is that going towards an actual sited project? And if so, is, you know, project location part of that process?
Yeah, well, I've been looking at different funding opportunities, and I'm not going to submit the application on my own, but if the county is interested, I can scope those out and look into them. So one of the areas was, this GoBiz funding round. There's money available. The primary emphasis is workforce, but this is workforce housing. So there's funding opportunities for workforce housing. There's also affordable housing grants potentially that can be applied to. I was kind of poking around the California website for those because the budget changed this year, as many of us know. So those kind of come and go. But there are different funding opportunities that we could potentially pursue. I'm basically asking you all, like, are you interested in me exploring these at length? Because I can talk to Allie, and I have been talking to some committee members about these, looking into other funding opportunities specifically.
Yes, Larry.
So, you know, I think Chuck probably summed it up best, and it's been referred to constantly. The County of Alameda really needs a policy for farm worker housing. And some of these values that we've discussed here today, like having a broad interpretation of what a farm worker is and an agricultural worker or a land steward and how they can be included in the housing question, I think those are policy issues that are going to need to be resolved. And so at this point, I don't know that there's anybody tackling that for the county. But I think my experience has been that the county is open to finding solutions and probably more interested in being diverse through certain departments than other departments are. So it's, you know, at this point, it's kind of a shopping trip that's needed to the agencies to figure out how to move forward with developing a policy for farm worker housing, ag worker housing, and land steward housing in Alameda County. The Ag Advisory Committee has already recognized that you just can't provide housing. There has to be jobs that are associated with it. And although there's a certain number of jobs in the eastern part of Alameda County and the whole of Alameda County that exist for farm workers, we don't really have enough farm worker jobs to develop a sustainable agricultural economy. So we have to lift the farm workers, numbers of farm workers, opportunities for housing, and the infrastructure of agriculture all at the same time. So, I mean, just our talk with the folks from CAL FIRE, they have kind of pointed out opportunities that could be available to start integrating. That's what we need to do if we're going to have a true agricultural economy that's moving this way rather than this way.
Christina, you mentioned that the nurseries seem to have the most critical need. Are those urban nurseries or rural nurseries or the best?
No.
Small.
Okay.
Yeah. The survey looked at, we sent the surveys to unincorporated
I was trying to think about the urban area.
Yeah.
If you looked at a horse facility at Count Mikey with a senior citizen home, somebody's got to be fed, the bedding's got to be done, and they got to get out and get exercised. It takes a lot of people to run a senior citizen's home. It takes a lot of people to buy a horse facility. It's the same kind of a deal. The horses have to get out. And that's the reason why you saw the racetrack struggling over here at Golden Gate Fields. Is when you look at, there were so many people living in the tack rooms, it was unbelievable. The fire department was having major issues with it. And so if you looked at agriculture in our community, it's wine, and it's equestrian. That's really it. You have a lot of rangeland left with cattle, but not quite as much demand for most of the cattle folks. They'll get 10 families together to round up the cows, do the branding, and that's about how they do it. It's not like an equestrian facility that has people, two or three people a day, either feeding, walking, blanketing, and taking care of the horse. So it's just a little bit different, but you're seeing more equestrian centers in our county than not. I mean,
yeah.
So I think if there was an area that would probably would be the wine industry and certainly the equestrian business. But I think the county focuses on a lot of the unhoused. We're always talking about the unhoused, but they don't realize that the people working in these equestrian facilities and the wine industry would be unhoused if they weren't housing them. You know what I mean? And they're finding ways to house them. And it would be nice if the county would recognize that and try to figure out a way to work with them instead of against them.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. You know, with this discussion tonight, there's been reference to social services being provided. And there is a connection between agriculture and social services that's being implied or associated, you know, in some manner. If that's going to happen, the burden can't be on agriculture to provide those social services because we're just a low profit margin industry. However, we can't collaborate. And by collaborating with social services, there's potential for a more efficient agricultural operation because of the potential consistency of worker flow and income. But then also you have the benefit to have a program where some of your workers actually move away from your facility and go to other operations.
Are any of those four considered the second one up there, the collaborative housing, or are they mostly the ADU?
Oh, you're asking if the examples I showed, if they are collaborative housing models? Well, I would consider, for example, I would consider Yet to be a bit of a collaborative housing model because they're taking folks that are coming into their facility and getting trained in a variety of workforce areas, and they're providing them specifically with housing. So we had a really interesting conversation. They were like, some of the folks said they didn't really like the affordable housing model because you would have a hard time getting kind of good actors staying in your affordable housing. So what they're doing is they are creating housing that is prioritizing folks that are doing a thing. They're doing a program, they're getting a skill. And so they have like the structure and they're teaching young folks, right, how to live a lot of like, you know, how to do laundry, feed themselves and all these different things at the same time. So they have a collaborative model where they're partnering with other organizations that are doing similar things. And they're saying, hey, if your students at Civic Corps need housing, they can stay here. And that way they're collaborating and they're getting also like, oh, some buy-in. So it's a little bit of a dorm model, but and they didn't even have folks living in here when I went to go visit. So I'd be really curious to ask that question because we know that there's a lot of housing need in this area of Oakland, but they said, you know, we don't want to open it up to everyone. We want to open it up to folks who are, you know, demonstrating that they're doing work to, you know, this is a temporary stopover, hopefully on the way to them becoming independent adults and becoming more housing secure. So I would consider this a collaborative piece. And a lot of them are collaborative in the sense that there's a partnership, for example, with the county, right? The county created this loan forgiveness program, but they partnered with the land trust, and the land trust is partnering with folks who are running operations. So there's a lot of these are collaborative, I would say.
David, yes. Yeah, thank you. Listening to the discussion, East Bay Regional Parks, which has come up in conversation, has worker housing at many of their parks. I've known the people who've lived there for years. They also have a kind of a different model here in Alameda County with the Taylor Foundation, Camp Arroyo, for underserved kids. And you mentioned, I kind of like to follow the money. And if there's a jobs program for Oakland, my mind thinks of how you look at the park model, and I don't know if there's any state park models similar. I believe there is Yosemite as a national. I know there is one at national, and I believe some of the state parks have residential rangers and ranger staff living on the property. So it strikes me, first, there has to be a willing partner, collaborator, to give some land up for a purpose, for a public good purpose. If that's done, and there's, you know, public private ownership of land, or something in a trust or a park, with a partner, it might be possible to put something up for temporary housing. And the park, the East Bay Regional Park, I think Mid-Penn and Santa Cruz County have similar structures for their regional park. But at Lake Del Valle, there's a residence for rangers and Fargus Plateau, and I could go on and on. There's just many of them.
I'll just comment real quickly. You're talking to the right person because I used to live in the Golden Gate National Recreation Area. I worked for the National Parks as an environmental educator, so I was one of those people who got to live there. And we only got to live there, and we got to live there without paying any rent because our organization paid rent to the National Park Service. But you could only live on site if you worked on site. So that was one of the biggest draws to that job. You know, like we did not earn a very competitive wage. But we got to live in this really beautiful place. So I think there's, I'm also glad you mentioned East Bay Regional Parks because we didn't survey East Bay Regional Parks, but that is one of the places where we're seeing like land stewards. We need a lot of land stewards. We need to manage our fire risk. We need a lot of, it's the biggest, you know, urban park area in the nation. So, it would be great, I think, to check out what they're doing and how it's working and also take some lessons learned because that model can be replicated. The goal is to have some land that is kind of permanent, build housing on it that could be temporary in the sense that the workers are temporary, but the structure is permanent. And so you can prioritize who gets access to that housing based on the need, right, on seasonality or...
The only thing I'm saying about East Bay Regional Parks is they're not doing enough of it. They got more money they got and more property than he can shake and stay down.
Well, maybe we could collaborate.
There's one thing that could be leaned on to do a better job. Housed. It would be East Bay Regional Parks.
Okay, I want to keep the agenda moving forward, guys. Before I open it up for public comment, Christina, thank you very much for that presentation. Sheila, thank you for your continued work on this issue. And Andrew, thank you for your work as well. You're asking for what advice or input on what next steps should be. It's clear that you've identified a need for this farm worker housing. It's clear also that the committee sees that there's a need from their own personal experience and their own communities. So to the committee, I'd ask, what should these next steps be? My thought is to keep an ag focus. You know, does somebody need to step up to try to do a pilot project to see what exactly agriculturalists can get away with in terms of making farm worker housing? Or should we attempt to try to meet with the respective departments that we think are holding us back? Should we try to make policy recommendations to the building department, to environmental health? Just ask about an open question to the committee, and then I'm going to go ahead and open it up for public comment. I saw this gentleman's been waiting to do.
I agree with Chuck. It's for us, you know, the cattle industry is the biggest ag industry. And we've been doing it years and years, and you know, on third generation. Getting old, what happens? You work the cattle. And you call your neighbor, and everyone shows up with their kids because, you know, all the people my age are older. We love doing it, but, you know, it's a young man's sport. And so that's the issue, is then we feed them and everyone's gone. And it's the family of these old-time ranchers that those are our farmers. And we need a succession plan, okay? Because I have two boys, and one boy can live on the property, and the other has the community. And same with, I have, you know, four brothers, and it's the same thing with all of them. And you're allowed two units, you know, per 100 acres. And we have that comfort, but, you know, how are you going to raise a family in APU? Okay, so we need, you know, farmers housing for our children, okay? And it's not a temporary thing, it's a generational. And so it's all the ranchers I know are running into, you know, the same issue.
Could you say your name, please?
Rex Warren.
Thank you, Rex.
So that's all I have for you. Thank you. So it's a bigger issue than just the temporary farmer.
Yeah, Yes, sir.
I'm Dan Devaney. I think what Rex failed to mention is that the 100-acre minimum lot size is the killer. He said he had two kids. If he could subdivide his into 33-acre parcels or 425-acre parcels, it sure would go a long way to building that next generation of a rancher.
Thank you.
Amen.
Amen. Amen.
I'm talking about it, girl.
Any other public comments from online?
I don't see any raised hands online.
Okay. So before we wrap this item up, can we give you any more input for what you're looking for in terms of next steps? You asked if we would like you to pursue finding out more about those programs that you suggested. And I think in general, the answer is yes, the committee is interested in these items. We see some hurdles on the county level that maybe we would also like to attack as well. Sheila.
I just have one question for the county, which is, I know you were working, when we started this project, some of it was, I think, to inform the housing element. So is there still a need there?
Yes.
And what is that need? Because it seems like from the policy standpoint, if you're working on that, that's where if we can inform that, if the committee can inform that based on our findings, seems like that would be helpful, but I don't know what's needed.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. And I was curiously making notes about what to do, what we could do next. So I think, first of all, maybe it would make sense to I don't remember if there was a specific subcommittee that was working on this or if it was just sort of ad hoc.
I think land use was possibly taking that mantle, but they had a lot to do as well.
So if they wanted to continue the work, we could definitely continue that discussion sort of outside of this meeting with them and then come back to the committee. But I think maybe a joint presentation, if we can manage it, to the planning department and the... We're not building yet, but planning, housing and community development and District 1, Supervisorial District 1 would make a lot of sense.
Okay,
because I think there are different things happening in each of those areas and different folks in each of those areas would be really excited to hear about, So that could be a next step, maybe in collaboration with the land use subcommittee of their game.
We hadn't discussed it at that level. So I think we're just meeting at the subcommittee level, so we can take a little bit more of a leadership in that.
It sounds great.
So I will follow up with the land use subcommittee and trustee and the departments D1.
Okay.
Thank you. Is there planning department staff that's already working on this, Allie?
Housing element generally, yes. And there are two relevant policies within the housing element that are related to this effort. One very specifically and the other one generally. So I think that aside from doing this study, I don't know who's going to be in charge of that second piece,
okay.
But I think this could provide some momentum for that.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Ellie, I think the county looked at the recreational park model, because
I
my thinking, I think LARPD, veterans park, that used to be residents for years ago, and may still be.
Still pretty
common. So a lot of park districts have
definitely
housing.
Be part of the conversation for sure. Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to go ahead and close this item where we've taken public comment.
Right. We're good. Right.
And moving on to item number 8, we have a presentation on proposed AAC communication strategy, which has been continued July 22nd. Andrew had come and had a proposal to collaborate with us, and we asked him to come back at the next meeting and talk about developing and implementing a communication strategy to enhance agriculture and agricultural lands. So Andrew chooses. So I'll let you go ahead, and eager to hear what you have to say. Thank you.
Before you get started,
Sure.
I have to leave, and I did not want this to be the case on this first turnover. I have to be home hard at 8:30 as a parent right now.
Yeah.
I will sign online. I'm very interested in what you're doing. I apologize. Thank you. Yeah, with that.
Okay, that was awesome. He's got a cutie little son. Yeah. You brought him to the
fireplace. Well, that's great.
Bye. So last time, the objective is implement communication strategy with the goals from anti-agriculture and agricultural plants for the Diego's system service to work the landscape. This is a slide for the last time, and if you go to the next one, this just covers the next slide.
Right.
Oh, it just takes forever.
Yeah.
Yeah, no worries. So last time we talked about that this communication approach would be to inform the public of the work that is being done, develop other communication partners, provide a communications infrastructure for what we do and then or what this group does. I'm going to include me in the meeting. And then this group will provide the oversight. So what I did is I looked at your, Carl did a great job of going back and as Jack pointed out, providing the foundation of what it is this committee does. And I wanted to play it back. You're a technical advisory panel of experts. You're focused on economic and fan hamster bag. It's particular land in Albuquerque County. You want to have increased economic viability of ag and ranching. You want to advise the supervisors and the public agencies, implement Measure D. And then your constituents are the cities, the district, the census designated areas. You want to minimize environmental impacts. And so I wanted to play that back so that I really pulled that in terms of what are we communicating and how are we working together. To create a newsletter, a successful newsletter with aligned policy objectives with the mission, make sure that what we're doing serves this group. It's got to be readable. You not have storytelling value so that somebody gets something out of reading it. The focus ought to be on communicating with our elected officials, our ag operators, the people who are actually doing that. Other ag partners, perhaps beyond Alameda County, city leaders, MACs, unincorporated, and of course the consumer. We'll have clear calls to action in what we do. Also, a newsletter should be branded so that somebody knows that when they open up this newsletter, they have an expectation of what they're gonna get from it. It should be attractive and it has a user-friendly design. And then we want to develop a reputation for accuracy and value to the reading, to the reader. I want to just talk about briefly that I do Inform Sunol. I started Inform Sunol about 7 years ago. And so I've been at least a couple of rounds through the process, some of the challenges that come up. And I offer that experience, and I would be happy to answer questions as to how Inform Sunol has become successful and how that might be the model to help you. When we look at some work that we've already started to do is on collecting distribution lists, we need to segment the distribution list because there are so many different groups in Alameda County Ag. Some people will want to talk about rangeland, someone will talk about urban ag, someone will want to talk about the horses. Someone will want to talk about the wine industry. So we have to have a distribution list that's segmented, and maintaining the distribution list is really important. I've already started to receive some of these, but in terms of who are we distributing to, supervisors and public agencies, the cities, the districts, the census designated areas, other elected officials, and the people that we have identified from the other slides being the people that we want to communicate to. A couple of issues that I wanted to bring up. I have one already. I attended the Casper Valley EBMAC, and an issue came up where the county is asking horse facilities only horse facilities, every 5 years to completely do a complete conditional use permit as if they're starting all over. It turns out they're the only ones. They don't do it to anybody else, just the horse folks. And so the Eden Mac unanimously sent this up to the Planning Commission. We got to see it at the Planning Commission last week. Am I saying it wrong? I mean, I'll let you
Castro Valley Mac, not the Eden Mac.
What's that?
It's the Castro Valley Mac.
Am I saying it wrong? Castro Valley Mac. That's what I meant. Thank you, Chuck. Chuck was very involved in that, of course. But when we went to the Planning Commission, I spoke, Larry spoke, the operators spoke, you spoke, you were one of the speakers, yes. And one of the wonderful things that happened was two things that really hit me. One is Rodrigo from Alameda County Planning. He said, horses are not ag in Alameda County. He said those words, and I've hold on to the quote. A couple of minutes later, a gentleman who is related to Jeff Nielsen, he's the member, he's Jeff's
son.
Brian Nelson.
It's actually his nephew. Jeff, I bought a truck from Jeff, so I know Jeff. But anyway, this gentleman was so articulate. And he said, look, in 2018, the rules changed. And if you aren't acting to the 2018 rules, you're out of compliance. And look at what we've done to all of these operators. It's essentially a shakedown. And I thought that he was incredible. He was very articulate. And the first thing that I wanted to do when I walked out of that, walked away from my desk where I'm watching remotely and checking in, was to summarize that. Because let's suppose that Rodrigo is all excited. He goes, I've been corrected. I'm going to go right back to work and I'm going to get on this. That would be wonderful, but that doesn't usually work out that way. Well, subsequently, I've been getting some calls back from some of the various operators that I asked to come to that meeting. And I had a horse operator tell me that they've got a $1,500 fine sitting over their head because they were told in 2018 that one thing, and now they're getting the county to hit them for the other. We got a real problem with it, of course, in this county, because we're not even following the rules. That got me real hot. You can tell me I'm really passionate. In fact, you know, Larry's been at it a long, longer than me. Said, wow, man, I'm really glad you're passionate. But that's one of the things I'd love to cover in such a way that we do it in partnership. Because I'll grant that Alameda County probably thought they were doing the right thing, but how fast can we get Alameda County to do the right thing on behalf of horse ag in this county? Now, I'll bet all of you around the room are probably sitting and going, wow, I wish Andrew was as passionate about my issue. Well, if you give me that passionate, I'm happy to write about it. And perhaps this service could help move the dial. Who do I report for guidance and oversight? Do I report to Jack? Do I report to somebody on the committee? That's just something that we need to answer. And then finally, I'm going to leave it quick, is questions, answers, and action items for me. Your, Jack, it's your floor.
Thank you, Andrew. I just want to say that I think the idea of this collaboration is intriguing, and it seems like almost we could have a, I think everybody's involved in one subcommittee or another, but it seems almost like you would be possibly leading a communication subcommittee, and maybe that is how the structure will be. That's an ideal.
The one thing that I would recommend is I am not a member of the MAC in Sonol, and I maintain that I am a journalist, independent. It keeps me out of Brown Act violations. It keeps me out of somebody telling me what I can and can't do. Had people threatening my funding. They said, guess what? I'm going to volunteer. You can't mess with me.
And it's totally fine for a non
Yeah, so I just want, that was the only provision is that, and because I didn't quite understand the what you were implying.
Absolutely.
But I am finding that I really love being independent.
Makes sense.
And using the First Amendment to our advantage.
Yes, Tracy.
Last time you were here, as I recall, you were going to get together with Bill and come up with a plan.
Yeah, we Andrew and I talked and you know, about where he could give me the most help on outreach. And the thing that would help me the most, and he's agreed to do this, if it's the board approves, is early on, you know, we developed a database of organizations that have interest in agriculture in Alameda County, and it's some 60 organizations. And so the challenge has been, how do you, if you have something, information that you want to push out, how do you easily push it out to those organizations? Well, he has experience in developing sort of databases that do that. So, you know, for example, there's a urban agriculture festival in Hayward in early October. That would be something they probably should go out. And so what I asked him to do is sort of develop a push database that we could, information comes out that we want to get out, that it would be fairly easy to do. And that could be segmented based upon issues and interests as we go along. So that's an area that he and I have talked about that I would find very, very helpful right now.
Absolutely. How do you feel about his idea of this regular newsletter? Is that something you guys have spoken about?
You know, if somebody wants to do that, I already put out a newsletter, major contributor. I can, I think it's fine to have some sort of regular, maybe quarterly or some update on ag issues in Alameda County. You know, the other thing that's very interesting is the annual crop report. It came out in November for 2024. You know, a lot of information in there. I don't know how much gets out to the general public or to people. You know, that's very easy to summarize that document, you know, to a one page, you know, bullet point. You know, this is what agriculture, you know, agriculture's, you know, $53 million industry in Alameda County, and it's up, production's up 7.5%, you know, from the previous year. You know, it's very, you know, so that's possible. And I, you know, I'll regret it. I'd be willing to put some effort into that as well.
It does sound like Andrew is suggesting that he maybe spearhead this. So it doesn't sound like it'd be a ton of extra work on your shoulders if we were to, you know.
If somebody's willing to do the lion's share of the work, I'm very happy to coast along with it.
Sure.
Yes, Chuck.
He brought something up that's really important. That would be a communication network. And whether it's a newsletter that Andrew put together, you know, often we have meetings and different municipalities. You got the Eden back, you get the Sonoma back. Now, Livermore is going to have a municipal council. All the unincorporated areas are getting municipal councils. And a lot of times things come before them on an agenda. And there might be 10 people in the room, but when we've had agricultural issues reach out, Dan's been really good about getting about 50 people in the room, and we're heard. And if we could do something with a newsletter that would work with the different MACs saying, hey, this is coming before you, and, you know, at least get it out to people to show up, then we'd get a much larger voice. And I will tell you that when you go into the Board of Supervisors chambers, or you call in and you got 50 people calling in, that they have a little, and they're a scorecard.
Oh yeah, they noticed that.
And and they keep a scorecard. And if we could organize a much stronger force, I think it would be a really good idea. And if Andrew could do that, I know that when we had the issue come before the back on the horse boarding facility, the hotline was going and people showed up, and if we had a formal hotline, would I think be a really a nice way to do things.
So. Well, to that end, Chuck, on the night that I was charged with helping get people to come to that meeting, I started getting online and I'm realizing, like, oh my God, I have to like Google all these people and I call them and they don't call back. No, we really, I think that this could be huge to help align people with the ag things that we want them to align together and get done.
So I guess to that point, you know, I'm not sure that the committee agrees on every item. I think, you know, you brought up an item that probably has good consensus, doesn't have to come to the committee and we can roll forward from, but I know, you know, there's different land use issues, different things that are we agreeing on
content
before it goes out? Is, you know, it's in these, you know, call to action. Sometimes you only got 3-4 days before a meeting happens. Are we, you know, who makes the decision of how the Ag Advisory Committee feels about an issue or two?
I think you're doing an article on something that would find, but have a review committee before that article goes off. But I also think that if you're just notifying the community of different agricultural meetings that are going, anybody can. You know what I mean? Say, you know, some old bank is reviewing a grape vineyard and they would like to, their conditional use permit is going to be discussed. I mean, things like that. Anybody can, you know what I mean? It's
neutral.
Yeah, it's just information.
Yeah. So when it comes to what's going on in this committee, I think that needs to be reviewed and approved by at least the executive.
I'm very much in favor, but there needs to be a comfortable
system
vetting process with the executive committee or
outreach committee.
Yeah,
would this is an action item, and so we are at some point after discussion looking for a motion. But would it, a good next step be to have Andrew, in partnership with outreach committee, discuss a path forward? Maybe we all, it sounds like we want to progress down this road, but cautiously. And so instead of putting together the newsletter as the next step, perhaps the next step could be to define how this newsletter will function and who will be approving it moving forward.
Well, it all depends on the deliverables you want. You know, if it's a notification tree, key actors, it's a newsletter that goes out on some regular basis. You know, it's exactly how one Andrew and I spending our time. So I think the welcome feedback. Okay.
Notifications, I think, are great. If it becomes a policy issue, then it needs to come before the board.
And I think a lot of what would go out is, like you say, there's a meeting that's going to discuss this and that. If you're interested, you know, here's where you go. I don't think that doesn't need to go before anybody.
I see three tiers, you know, and I'm sure there could be more notifications, sort of general interests or personal interest stories, and then things that focus on policy. And when we develop policy, we develop its stages, and, you know, we will finally have a policy action item that we bring forward. And it may be that we want to limit Andrew's coverage of our policy until the policy is defined and acted on by the committee. So there should, I think, especially at the beginning, we should give the authority to either the chair or an assign of the chair to review and work with Andrew. And that person could then point Andrew to the different subcommittees. And, you know, we could do some trials and see how.
And the subcommittees can feed up to this as well. I mean, if there's something in particular that they, you know, they know about that they want to get in that newsletter.
Yeah, and then obviously
really is good.
Having that bi-directional, as Andrew gets to know the committees, he'll be able to knock on a door and say, hey, how about this?
Yeah. And with a schedule, a timeline, a schedule that basically says, okay, committee,
here's your deadline for submitting content if you want to be in the next news, next loop. So I wouldn't do anything less than quarterly, honestly.
When we established our website content, there was that question of can we do that and who owns the website and what's appropriate to go there. Do the other Macs have a newsletter too? And do we need to get any protocols taken care of?
Yeah, I'll have to look into, does anybody know offhand? Cache Valley Mac doesn't have a newsletter. What comes to mind immediately is that there's a reporter that covers the Cache Valley Mac in the Cache Valley Times. Yeah, so that's another potential route is to go through existing publications and to have, you know, coverage of what you're doing here.
So I mean, who would own this, so to speak?
Yeah. And I can find out specifically. I don't know.
I mean, would he be authorized to use the county logo, for example?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. County logo is a tough one. That involves county.
Whose is it? And the identity has to be clear too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I can find out sort of what the limitations of that might be. Yeah. And
I need to do that.
The supervisors, I mean, David has his own weekly newsletter.
Mm-hmm.
And many, many groups, I'm involved in water and parks and Delta issues and I get stuff. Some of it's good daily. And some might forward to some of you if with an FYI and not taking any positions and you've got some of my junk. And it's information. I think it's good information. I wouldn't share it if it's dealing with, you know, with Sunol or horses or stuff that are near and dear to me, and I may know a little, not much.
Well, I recommend that Andrew does work with Bill and comes up with an outline and a procedure while Allie is looking into what we're allowed to use or not use, and that we pursue providing this information as well as you coming up with the groups to be able to get the information out to. I'm sure that will keep getting added as we go along.
Oh, yeah.
That sounds like at least, if Bill, if you're willing to do it.
I've already done a lot of work finding those groups, essentially.
I'll second that motion.
Oh, that was a motion. Okay.
Do we need to take public comment before we make a motion?
No, do it after the motion.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So you can discuss the motion and then we can take public comment.
Okay. Would any discussion on this motion?
Let me make sure I got it right.
Yep.
So what I wrote was Andrew will work with Bill and come up with an outline and procedure list while I'm looking into what's allowed.
Yeah.
Okay, cool.
Content.
Mm-hmm.
Motion for a second. Okay, all for this motion, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. All opposed? Okay, hearing none.
Right.
So the motion passes.
We didn't do public comment.
Sorry.
Yeah.
Didn't do it.
Sounds like a very good idea.
Excellent. That's a public comment. I don't see any raised hands online.
Apologies.
Great.
So we'll take public comment now, though.
And no raised hands online.
Okay.
And I'm sorry, I missed the first and second. That was first.
Me,
yeah.
Karen.
Okay. And Karen. Perfect. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Okay. Well, we have 18 minutes left in our scheduled time. And moving on, closing this item and moving on to item number 9, brief subcommittee reports. In our 18 minutes, we'll cover that and any announcements and agenda items for future meetings. So with that in mind, it looks like, Karen, you have quite a bit that you would like to talk about.
Go very, very quickly, and an action items. I'm glad that Veronica Rivers from USDA was on the call earlier. I don't know if she still is.
Yeah.
She still is. Veronica, I introduced you a little bit last meeting, but we're glad that you're here with us. And we'll look forward to any contributions you have to share from USDA down the road as well. We have a new application for the cattle livestock management large parcel owner position, and you all received in your membership packet the attachment to read his his application. So I'd like to introduce Rex Warren, who's sitting here behind Jerry. And he is a rancher, as he introduced himself. His application was not very lengthy, but it was very on target. And I would like him to introduce himself for just a few minutes and explain why he wants to go to another meeting, because I know he's done a lot of it.
Short and sweet. We are large parcel agricultural, been doing it for, I'm 3 generations. My kids will be 4 generations. Same property out of Cole Canyon. There's always stuff in the agricultural that is going on at the county level and other levels. And, you know, the actual, you know, property owner is the last one to find out about it. And so we want to change that perception, get it out there a little faster. So so I used to come to quite a few of these meetings, and then I had some issues I had to take care of, and so I'd take quite a bit of time off. And so I'm back now. So, and it is, we have to get outreach to the community, because you can see here, we do need the younger generation to start getting involved.
And you have a fan in the room, Chuck.
Well, I was just going to, you know, I've known this guy for quite a while, and he comes to a lot of the MAC meetings. A couple of things he didn't put in here. Two of his boys worked for me at one point in time, and one of them went to Annapolis, graduated, is in the Marine Corps right now.
Wow, hey.
And Monterey. I believe he's in Monterey now.
Yep.
He's at Bryan
School. Yeah.
Good kids. And the other one works in the water well drilling business or pump business. And his wife is great. She works over at St. Mary's. And the family's been around a long time. His grandmother is Garen.
Oh.
You heard of Garen Ranch. Garen Portal. So those are his grandparents. And I used to deliver papers to Bud Garen.
As a little kid. God, on the hill.
Up on the hill.
But I have you walk up there.
So, you know, when we had this opening, immediately because I think Rex is a great addition to the group, and has a real strong history in our community. And, you know, and he's on this side of the hill, so you get a little balance between Livermore and...
We don't have enough people from the west side of the county on this committee.
Yeah,
so. Although it was nice to come to Cache Valley for the meeting tonight, it didn't hurt at all. Before I ask Jack to open up for discussion, I would like to nominate Rex Warren to take on this position and ask for a second.
Second.
Okay, and I'll open it up for discussion.
Just from the
Jack.
Comments for today.
Yeah, I've worked with Rex at the committee level, and I found him to always be attentive, measured in his responses, and very understanding of other people. So I think he'd be a great candidate for the Ag Advisory Committee.
Thank you. Any other discussion from the board? Or if not, we'll move to public comment on this item.
No one in the room has raised their hands, and no raised hands online.
Seeing none. Can we have the ayes?
Aye.
Nays? Hearing none. The motion to recommend Rex for the cattle livestock management seat, large parcel, has passed unanimously.
And we'll walk him through the next paperwork phase. So welcome.
So that means we're recommending to the board that they appoint you.
Yeah.
And hopefully that happens expeditiously, and then you'll be sitting at the table with us.
Sure.
Thank you.
And the rest of my report is written, so I've saved you 2 minutes. Go ahead with this.
Okay. So next, we'll just run through the list, see if anybody has any updates they'd like to give. So outreach, Bill, do you
have? I think we've covered it.
Okay, perfect. Sounds good to me. Land use, Diana?
I wouldn't say updates on the current projects that we're working on, but agritourism updates?
I just had one. I know I had asked for letters of support for the Eco Farm conference. We have not heard back from them yet. And what I want to say is that's not always good news in our industry. It may be that they're using our bid as, you know, to try to get the where they've been for 40 years to step it up a notch. But in the meantime, I will let you know the second I know anything about that coming back. And the second is that I was just in India for 10 days working on tracking the Indian market to come this way and to the Tri-Valley. And they are very interested in tours. So, you know, more agricultural type of tours and more rural. It's usually city folk trying to get away. They've done a lot of initial travel and they're very seasoned travelers. So by the time they get to the Tri-Valley, they've been there, done that for the big city. And now they want to really explore the nature and outdoors and open spaces. So that was a really good thing for me and to be able to hear from all of them. So just I'm going to keep pushing it.
Thank you, Tracy. Solar Policy Subcommittee, I think the last step that I gave was that we are working on our updated policy document, and myself and Chuck and Larry, we are plugging away at it still and hoping to have something ready by the end of the year to share with the board. We're still on track for that. Equine, Larry?
Yeah, the happenings outside the Equine Subcommittee have kind of run in parallel to what's happening with the Equine Subcommittee. So we're going to kind of pay attention to what's happening in the community. And then Chuck and the other members of the subcommittee will be sitting down to put together a plan based on that. So I know that's real ambiguous, but but that's what's happening.
Sure.
There's progress.
Not exactly.
Person here that has worked on something for the equine group, and I know he came tonight. Dan, you got something to say, or what you've been working on?
Sure, I can give a quick readout. I wasn't planning on speaking tonight, but Andrew mentioned the meeting. That was me, Andrew.
Oh,
and we talked on the phone so many times at a couple of meetings. So at the Pastor Valley Mac, I agendized an item to change the SDR requirements for the boarding facilities. They're truly the redheaded stepchild in the ag world right now, having a 5-year renew period. The Planning Commission picked it up as a slightly different agendized item, and they made a recommendation to have the planning department revise the rules and submit that to the Transportation and Planning Subcommittee of the Board of Supervisors. I've spoken with Albert and Rodrigo from planning. They don't want to do a presentation, so they're going to let me continue to carry the ball. And then we're going to see where the subcommittee of the Board of Supervisors takes this, how they want to proceed forward. It might be that either myself or somebody from the planning department is here presenting to your group, depending on the direction that the subcommittee wants to take it. So, but hopefully we'll get, I think we made a pretty compelling argument that there's lots of regulation within the horse boarding facility, and none of our proposal has to do with changing the regulations. Regulations as it relates to public works and the water horse protection ordinance, the regulation from environmental health that oversees three different functions, manure management, hazardous material, and septic systems, regulation from code enforcement, animal control. Even this subcommittee is a mediation board for perhaps neighbor disputes that would relate to equine facilities. So the proposal that we're putting forth right now doesn't change any of those regulations. It simply removes the planning department from having to go through a renewal process every 5 years. Mm-hmm. So planning sets it up initially, and then it gets properly regulated with the bodies with equities in that regulation. So I don't know if we'll be coming before this board or not. It really is going to depend on what the Board of Supervisors wants to do with it.
So this obviously is the parallel issue. And, you know, what has happened is that a question that was requested or a presentation that was requested by the Transportation Planning Committee of the Ag Advisory Committee over a year ago was left at about the same stage. You know, the direction was given to staff. to respond to a comparable sort of suggestion that came from this committee. And there hasn't been a response to that. So by good luck, a citizen activist has come forward, asked the same question, and it's now put in a position where we get to sit back a little bit, see how that unfolds, and then work together as a subcommittee to see how we can start moving on to the next steps.
I just want to say that Dan took the bull by the horns, brought it to the MAC, because there was a lot of equestrian centers having difficult times with some of the issues. Then he went beyond that, and I helped him a little bit. We went on and got the Planning Commission to hear it, and it went 7-0 in the Planning Commission. It went 5-0 on the Planning Commission, 7-0 on the MAC, to go to the Board of Supervisors with it and to the Transportation and Planning. Then it will be heard by the Transportation and Planning shortly. And then my feeling is that they're going to come back to a recommendation to work with the Ag Board on some sort of procedures and policies to get something done. So
yeah, and that actually extends back to foundational work that was done by this committee about 20 years ago, adopted by the supervisors 20 years ago. So it's been a real spark in the process.
And the Resource Conservation District and NRCS were very involved at that time.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Finally, 20 years later.
I think that's fast in government.
Yeah. But I would just say this guy here took you more by the horns and ran with it along, because it wouldn't have happened, we would have still been 20 years down the road again.
Sure.
No, credit to you, Dan, because you called me, you quickly got me on board, and I appreciate the way that you conducted yourself in that meeting. And I felt like it was a real team effort, and good on you.
Okay. Moving on to Urban Ag. Jeff's the only person that's here from that committee. Do you have give any updates? There's no pressure.
There's no update at this time.
Okay. Now, Dick, Trail Subcommittee.
I can report really, really quick. We want to let you guys all know that the committee is looking at going for regional trails in other counties. Hearing the fire folks and hearing the urban living quarter folks, all the counties around us are looking at these significant agriculture issues. Trails gets people to and from. So, and Saturday, you've heard us talking about our four trail priorities. Tesla property, South Bay Aqueduct property, Tesla's state, South Bay Aqueduct is DWR, Doolittle Collier Canyon. Three of the four have the opportunity to go to other counties. Certainly Tesla, and Tesla had a meeting Saturday. There was Larry and Dave Lund went, and they gave us two maps, and one of them's got a horseshoe on it. This is state maps, and they've got some additional trails. So our trail subcommittee put a letter in last April. So we were partners of participants of record in the proceeding, and we still are. And we said, you know, we wanted to have the state recognize the historical values of the resources, like the brick factory, Carnegie Brick Factory. At one time, there was more people in Tesla than Livermore. That's a factoid. It's true. And there was a railroad that went up to it, Western Pacific Railroad, over in San Joaquin County, clear up to the brick factory. And there was a commerce wagon train over into Livermore for bricks and commerce. So, they're ranch roads up there now. Years ago, I had the pleasure of being on some. So they're going to have another meeting on the 30th. We're going to attend. We didn't make any statements, but I really want you guys to know that state does it different than East Bay Regional. They put a horseshoe on one of the maps for staging areas on the Livermore side. And I've gotten calls, Larry, I haven't told you this, but some of the other folks that were there, one is a big equestrian lady that I used to ride with, and they're supporting these the equestrian staging areas on both sides because we need parking, and then we need to get on the old existing ranch roads that are still there. They don't have to build new trails. All we have to do is open up the ones that are there. So we're going to try to tell them that, and Larry might tell you a little bit more about why we want to go to other counties, because Tesla's right on the border. And Carnegie, the motorcycle park, is in the other county, San Joaquin. I'm sorry. And the state's mission that we're, the state's parks recreational mission, very, very short, and we can support it, is to promote for the health, inspiration, and education of the people of California by helping to preserve the state's extraordinary biology diversity, protecting its most valued natural and cultural resources, and creating opportunities for high quality outdoor recreation. They mined and built bricks, mined coal out there, and
it doesn't work with that.
So that's what I wanted to share. Larry, can you add anything on the regional?
Yeah, no, the Ag Advisory Committee as of yet hasn't really embraced these regional connections, but the four trails that we've targeted as having regional or bi-county East Bay Regional Park District support, it turns out that of those four trails, three of them have connectivity to what are called state or national or regional trail corridors. And those corridors are intended specifically to encourage local jurisdictions to develop trails within the communities that connect the communities, provide marketing opportunities, provide educational opportunities, and connect educational facilities. So that being said, we've recognized that we need to start looking at how we can kind of develop our relationship with our neighbors in order to develop state corridor systems for trails. And we've reached out a little bit. We've had good support from, pretty good support from adjacent counties that want to work with us. And hopefully we can start developing that, bring it back to this committee and ask for sort of official approval to start looking at these state corridors as part of our information gathering and potentially to embrace and move into the trail systems of East Bay Regional Park District, Alameda County, and Livermore Area Recreation and Park District.
Thank you. Okay, last subcommittee with the right to give a report, the Water Resources and Infrastructure Subcommittee. Chuck, anything you want to?
Hey, just a brief thing. The permitting process for water wells has taken a lot longer than it ever has in the past. And it was Zone 7, either this week or next week, that's a calendar, to kind of see what we can do to streamline that process a little bit and work together a little, get things done a little quicker. So, meeting with Jeff over there.
Any updates on the hydrant issue?
No, I want to ask Kenny about it. That's one of the
questions. Yes. Be great to hop on that.
What I was told briefly, just over the phone, was that they wanted to make sure that there was no way for the water that we were putting in the containers to come back into their system. So they were looking for an air gap between the distribution line.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Yeah, just the one thing. I want to say thanks to Allie Arbers and Dick Quigley for sending the maps that help. Let me go to the problem statement. Sinol, we had two portions of Sinol have horrendous flooding back on New Year's Eve, I believe it's 2022. And the two flooding areas are in that Box Canyon I talked about earlier, which is Sinbad Creek. And the flows were just incredible, and people were having damage to their homes. We had to get help from FEMA. And the other one was a school. The school had over $1 million of damage, and a lot of that was from the Alabina de la Laguna. Well, David Halbert, for some time and for several years since, has been struggling with getting the right group together to come up with a solution for mitigating flooding in Sunol. And David has a follow-up meeting on October 2nd. Obviously, those of us who live in Sunol, especially downtown or in the woods, and I'm sure it could affect anybody in Sunol, flooding, we're very interested in there being a solution. And this maps that you gave us, I immediately distributed it to a large group of people and told them, hey, now you have the information to get yourself ready for this meeting. And that was with a little push, because please be prepared for this meeting. We cannot afford it.
And that meeting is October
2nd. And I'll be publishing that again in Informed Sunol. Anybody who's in the room that doesn't receive Informed Sunol, just see me, it's free. And you might get it whether you want it or not. Just tell me if you don't want it, it might put you on. But that's how we roll. But thank you for the maps. That's going to really help.
Thank Ellie for the map.
Thank you.
It's wonderful. And there's three or four or five or six stakeholders on that map. One of them, the biggest property owner below the Verona Bridge, is San Francisco Water District. And I told a couple people here, you know, it's not one of our report trail priorities, but a trail comes now down to the Burnell Bridge in Pleasanton, right next to the fairgrounds, Chuck, and we could have a if we could figure out a way to get through Castlewood Country Club, and there may be a way, we could ask San Francisco Water to help us build a top of bank with the water tower and Sunol, in my opinion, and we could have a party. And I want to invite you guys all to a trail party that my Rotary Club is having Thanksgiving morning, starting at Pleasant and Sparks Park to the Livermore Outlets on the top of bank of La Laguna to the Mocho, and it's cool.
I feel like we've kind of moved on to final comments.
It looks like there's any comments on the subcommittee.
Okay, so no public comments on the subcommittee. Don, were you wanting to say something?
No, just at the electrolytes notes at the end.
Okay, got it. Any other final comments? Agenda item 10.
I can just note that if anybody does have like flyers or things for events that they're holding that they want me to forward to the committee, I can do that.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
You can take a look at the agenda items and try to get a feel for how much time they're going to take in the evening.
Yeah.
Would be much appreciated, because I look at this agenda sometimes and it's way too many items on it. They feel like I get a lot of value out of the conversation. I would like to have had a little bit more conversation, heard a little bit more about the housing and what we're going to do. I'd like to see a lot more action items come out that we get done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want to confuse our work with results, but, you know, we need results.
Yes, it's more.
Yeah. We had
thank you, Chad.
District 1's office reached out to Kathy. There was a contingent of a delegation of some growers from South Korea that came over. They spent a day at Wente on Sunday, and then yesterday we went together work with Camyar, our small crops farm advisor, and Colleen Hotchkiss put together a little tour for us out at Sunol Ag Park, and they got to meet some of the farmers there, and a lot of interaction, and then they went to another winery yesterday. Right?
So.
We were able to get them at Savio and Main Restaurants. So they can talk to Chef Francis about farm to fork. So
He was great. He came out and told us where the food's coming from. And it was it was awesome.
Thanks.
I mean, kind of on that note, just since this seems poignant, then we over in Mountain House had a group of hemp growers from Brazil and the University of Viçosa, who were developing some kind of proprietary technology, had ended up coming up to California, and they did a field trip, a little day trip to the farm, and you know, we had a nice cultural exchange and idea exchange. That was fun.
Good.
Done. So we don't need to talk about item 11 necessarily. Okay. All right. With that, appreciate everybody's time here. And go ahead and adjourn the meeting. Perfect.